Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Dr. Geeta Nayyar, Chief Medical Officer at Greenway Health, and another returning guest, and also another in the series of HIMSS digital influencers. So, Geeta, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Thanks for having me.
I know you've been on the show before, but I still want to give you the opportunity to give everyone a little bit more of an introduction in terms of who you are and what you do.
Sure, I'm happy to. So my name is Dr. Geeta Nayyar. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Greenway Health. I am a rheumatologist by background, and I am a very passionate doc who is still practicing and loving the experience I'm having at Greenway, which is an opportunity to really shape our new products as well as lead our patient safety initiative. So it's been a fantastic journey so far.
So, and Greenway is an EMR company, right?
Correct.
So what's it like to be a chief medical officer inside of an EMR company?
Well, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. you know, I would say it's certainly interesting times. I'm really enjoying the experience. And one of the reasons that I was attracted to join Greenway is they've really given me a lot of opportunity to kind of run and trailblaze. So I'm doing everything from leading our clinical informatics team, which is supporting our patient safety functions, to working on our next gen platform, building our new product offerings, as well as just being out there helping align with customers and really understanding pain points so that we can solutionize them. So it's really the perfect mix for my background.
Are you the only chief medical officer in an EMR company, or are there others out there?
So at Greenway, I am the chief medical officer, so I'm sort of the main doc. We do have any number of, again, we have a clinical informatics team made up of a whole swath of clinicians from different elements of the ecosystem. And then we have a variety of consultants that also support us. And then, of course, we have a customer base of physicians that I work with on a routine basis for all of those initiatives.
Now, kind of being on the inside now, do you feel like there's more hope that, you know, a lot of the pain points that get a lot of popular press are starting to be addressed?
I do. You know, again, I can only speak for my experience at Greenway, but I think what we're seeing in the industry is that, you know, clearly the EHRs are the infrastructure for everything we're really trying to do in health tech and healthcare to a large extent. So I think that you're seeing the regulations, the policy environment, the insurance environment pushing on all of those levers to continue to make this infrastructure even more sophisticated. And we're learning, right? We're learning that some of this was a land grab in the beginning. And so now you see a lot of folks having to backpedal and kind of up their technology stack to meet those demands.
You know, while we're recording, the ONC interoperability rules haven't come out yet, but kind of what have you been doing to help plan for operating under those what we've only seen are proposed rules so far, but, you know, kind of what have you been doing to start really planning for that new reality?
Sure. So, you know, again, I think that the spirit is, again, and where the puck is going is clearly that, you know, interoperability is a must and the sharing of data is a must. You know, I would say that the EHR companies, we can only do our part, right? At the end of the day, it's going to be upon the providers, the payers, the pharma companies. Every stakeholder in the mix has got to be part of this. And so I think, you know, we can only do our part. We're absolutely keeping an eye on that. And we certainly have great relationships with the ONC and others. And we want nothing more than our customers to be successful. We're really just the tools for our doctors, for our clinicians, for their back-end systems as well. But ultimately, this really lies in the reality of day-to-day front lines medicine. And I think it's the customers that are going to make the decisions of what they're going to open up and what they won't.
No, and I think you're very right that it's really not just an issue from one piece of the industry. It is all the different players and people with an invested interest who need to come together. And I think that means getting everyone talking to each other and finding ways to collaborate as opposed to just pointing fingers.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that we talk about this in an electronic silo, right? But even in a paper silo, I mean, if you're Dr. Smith and you're competing with Dr. Patel down the street or Dr. Garcia down the street, the incentives don't align to really share. It has nothing to do with the technology, right? It's just your one business, another doc is another business, or your hospital system competing with another hospital system down the road. So I definitely think it's interesting times, and certainly the person who I think has the most to benefit is the consumer.
Are you seeing kind of perspectives in that direction changing? You know, thinking more of your, as you said, you're still a practicing physician. So kind of how is that experience aligning with your vision of the larger industry?
Well, I continue to learn, right? Because I have a faculty affiliation with the University of Miami. So I love that I get to practice. I also really love that I'm with the doctors of tomorrow, and they're smart as whips. They know exactly how to use technology. They're focused on bedside manner. They get the people aspect, and it's just going to be an interesting evolution as we go from, I think now we keep blaming the providers, but you know, I see really savvy providers coming up and providers who want to do the right thing. So I think the technology is just it's just a tool, like the stethoscope, the MRI or CT scanner. It's not a silver bullet. I don't think that the technology part of it is necessarily the hardest part. I think that there's so many different levers right now that are putting a burden on the system. Technology that could improve certainly being one of them, but there's a lot of dysfunction, Matt, as you know. So there's a lot of things we could all fix.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. It's technologies seem to become the easy scapegoat, but you know, kind of as you're saying, it's really more systemic than that. And you know, maybe the technology is just highlighting those issues because it is pushing them to the fore more quickly. But you know, I think as you're implying, a lot of the underlying concerns are not really new.
You know, that's a great point. I think that everyone thought, you know, we would throw technology at healthcare and all of our problems would be solved, right? It was kind of a misnomer. It was thought, or I think built up to be this silver bullet. And I think what it's highlighting is exactly what you said, which is that there are many other dysfunctions in the system, whether it's the payment models, the competitiveness, the lack of transparency and pricing. I mean, there are so many, you know, consumer literacy, healthcare literacy. So technology, we absolutely want to rule that, and we should, right? That should be actually one of the easier parts of the ecosystem to fix. These other dimensions that technology has to operate within, though, continue to I think stale the process.
Yeah, and I think it kind of goes back to the point you're making a couple minutes ago about some of the concerns about data sharing and, you know, kind of practices wanting to be in a silo. Didn't matter if you're in a paper or an electronic record. It was the way the system is set up and the way you're encouraged to run a business. And technology is really not going to solve that problem. It's going to work within those confines because it's hard for one tool to kind of really break apart all the barriers.
That's right. That's right.
So kind of thinking about those systemic issues, you know, how do you think the industry is evolving? I think things like value-based care have gotten a lot of attention over the past few years, but you know, is that really kind of getting a hold of things?
Sure. You know, I think we're slowly evolving. I don't think that we're there yet in many regards. I also think that there are challenges to the value-based care environment in terms of I still think there are challenges to where the incentives are placed. I think there are challenges to, you know, what is truly something that a provider can move the needle on versus the consumer having some skin in the game and the insurance companies, frankly, having some skin in the game, right? I mean, if you take telemedicine, for example, telemedicine could solve so many problems in healthcare today, but we can't get reimbursed on it. Right? Physicians can't really get reimbursed, I would say, appropriately for it. And so we still have a really big problem with the way our incentives are set up. And I don't think value-based care is going to be a silver bullet either, because it's still generating many different problems, many different documentation tasks. It's still leading to a burden for physicians who are not yet equipped, I think, to meet those demands.
No, I think that's a very good point. And it's all, and also kind of the point you're making of you still don't necessarily have everyone incentivized to go in that direction. It is one that at least in my view, doesn't really get discussed enough, especially, you know, I've seen maybe one or two discussions of, you know, how do you incentivize the patient or the consumer? Because it seems like that angle is missing from, certainly I think it's missing from most of the Medicare, if not all of the Medicare models. And even commercial models, I'm not sure how much, you know, individuals are being made a part of that transformation equation.
That's right. And, you know, it's about being set up for success, right? I mean, I think right now docs are not set up for success. Consumers are not set up for success. And this lofty goal of value-based care, it's a great theory, but it's still not quite playing out, I think, exactly as we all hoped.
And maybe kind of bringing it back around a little bit, you know, what role do you think technology solutions could have in helping to move progress forward or make it easier to get everyone engaged?
So I think it's everything you're seeing now, Matt, which is that I think everyone in the health tech space now is trying to leverage, you know, AI, trying to leverage smart systems, more end-user friendly systems. You're seeing a lot more discussion of the wraparound experience, which I'll call patient engagement or patient experience, which is what happens when you actually leave the doctor's office. But there are so many things that are independent of technology. Like I said, you know, when it comes down to price transparency, when it comes down to healthcare literacy, when it comes down to social determinants of health, I mean, these are big impacts to the system and how we use it that technology has nothing to do with. So I think we just have to be really clear on the drivers we can move and the ones we can't.
In addition to thinking about what drivers can we move, it's also getting past the initial reaction of let's fight any of these changes. Because I think at least half of the examples you gave, they're announced. And I think price transparency is the most obvious one, but it's announced. And all of a sudden you have everyone rushing to block it. You know, so getting past that initial point of we don't want to change to how can we be a part of the discussion to drive what we view as more proactive or more beneficial change would be, at least from one perspective, a good place to start.
Completely agree. Completely agree.
So, and for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Dr. Geeta Nair from Greenway Health, and we've been talking about kind of changes within the healthcare system. And what I'd like to do, Geeta, now is actually pivot a little bit. And, you know, I think we've highlighted a bunch of challenges that are remaining within the system. And I think you alluded to it a little bit, but a lot of these problems are causing burnout, or I think it's now being more phrased as moral injury to physicians and other clinicians. So I'd like to get your perspective on what you're seeing when it comes to those issues.
So, you know, I'm really impressed with the awareness around burnout. I think it's terrific. I think it's long overdue. I think that we still have a tremendous amount to do with regards to solving the issue. And again, it really does lend itself to, you know, what parts of the equation are solvable in the short term versus the long term. But it really comes down to just a system that is so overburdened and taxed, and that there's such a big disconnect between the front lines of care and sort of the main decision makers in care, regulators, insurance companies, consumers, et cetera, that are just not properly informed and aligned on how healthcare delivery happens. And it's great to see the awareness. I think we still need to continue to move that drumbeat and push things forward, but there's still a long way to go in that regard. And it's just so unfortunate to see so many docs that are truly, I think, members of the community trying to serve their community that are just so overwhelmed and so so taxed now that you're going to see more and more areas where people do not have a physician to take care of them or don't have one to take care of them well.
Do you think issues around burnout are new, or is it that messages are spreading faster, or it seems like so many things, just the pace of change in the world is also accelerating, kind of the fallout?
No, I do. I think that healthcare has gone through such a transformation, and I do think technology is one part of it, that I do think that there is a reason that we're talking about it now, and there's a reason we were not talking about it before. And it really does have to do with all the changes in the incentives, as well as the technology, the system dysfunction, the amount of debt that medical students are taking on so early on in their careers. I mean, there's so many different levers that are contributing to it. And I think that they're just all, it's created this perfect storm of the average physician today just not being set up for success.
So in terms of thinking about what it takes to be set up for success, do you have any, you know, any ideas in terms of what could be done to help improve and really get newer physicians and, or not just newer physicians, but I think, you know, arguably all physicians into a better place?
You know, I think the more that physicians are involved in the decision-making components of the system, you know, when you see more and more physicians joining regulatory bodies, more and more physicians joining managed care companies, more and more physicians being at EHR companies, I mean, essentially, we are the ones on the front lines, right? Whether it's the physicians, the patients. So the more you have those two stakeholders in the mix, the closer we're going to get to alignment and a better system. Because right now, again, you still have folks, stakeholders that have never touched a patient, have absolutely never touched a patient a day in their life, and they're making really big decisions about how healthcare delivery should happen. So it's a very academic theoretical approach as opposed to a real life solution. And that just continues, that dysfunction continues to lead to more and more dysfunction.
So what skills do you find are helpful for physicians to develop or to kind of seek out to help either, you know, kind of grow beyond focusing solely on the clinical side or to transition? Because, you know, it sounds like, you know, you're in a pretty unique position to be able to provide some insight there.
Sure. You know, and I'm not suggesting that doctors stop practicing. That's the exact opposite of what I want to happen, right? It's just more of how do you bring things to bear and how do you translate what that's like to some actionable place in the ecosystem, right? So like with us at Greenway, we have a clinical, we have a team of clinicians that advise us as we're building products. We actually at our user exchanges do an entire panel on physician burnout and we share best practices that have nothing to do with our technology. I just lead a panel and I say, hey, how does your practice deal with this? How does your practice deal with this? Please share those ideas independent of Greenway, but we're kind of putting together or convening that forum for our customers because we want them to be successful with and without our technology, right? Because we realize our technology is only one part of it. So I think it's sharing best practices. I think it's being involved, you know, partnering with your vendor, whoever they might be, being involved with your medical association, organizations like HIMSS. The more you can bring that point of view to bear on the policies and drivers and payers that are really the ones controlling most of the narrative, right? I think society really likes to demonize the doc, but as you're seeing now with the discussions in burnout, the docs themselves are victims of the system, right? The docs, the patients, the people actually experiencing it are really getting the short end of the stick. And the more we make that transparent and articulate what that means, that's how we will solve it.
No, I think it's, you know, as you're saying, it's taking away time and attention from why I think most physicians probably went into medicine. It's, you know, I know talking with my wife, who's a primary care doctor, it's all the background stuff interferes with her being able to do what she wants to do. And, you know, I think as you're saying, it's, you know, how do you help kind of advocate for where the industry or where the system should be focused?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So I guess thinking about that, how were you able to kind of carve that balance? Because as you said, you have both of those roles, and I don't know if many people or many physicians, I should say, are maybe aware of how to balance both the clinical and that, you know, kind of advisory or management capacity.
So, you know, I don't know that it's for everyone, right? I mean, for me, this is my passion. So it's just, you know, truly secondhand in that it's my passion. The word balance is one that, you know, I would say one day is more balanced in one direction, the other day is more balanced in another. Tomorrow I'm seeing patients most of the day. There'll be very little of the day-to-day health tech work. So, you know, it's I think to each his own, but you do have to follow your passion. And certainly if it's not your bailiwick, I think working with other docs, you know, like myself and championing that and making sure that we see it is just as important, right? So I don't know that there's a clear direction or path, but I think that the more passionate you can be on realizing the root cause of some of these things and helping empower those that can or find yourself in those roles, it's just it will pay it forward for the entire industry and the entire profession.
Well, I agree with you that you can't necessarily establish the same path for everybody. I think, you know, your insight there of saying find your passion and be able to to follow that and nurture it. I don't know if that's necessarily something that's said enough, because I find when I talk with people about, where, my own career developed, it's, I found what I was passionate about, and all of a sudden you find doors start opening or opportunities start coming up. So it's, I think, your comment there of this happens to be where you're passionate is, I think that does translate to everybody of, think about your own practice or your own career, your own life. And if you can find your areas of passion, you're going to find probably some unexpected paths.
Definitely. And Matt, for me personally, how I even ended up in my current role or career path was really that. I mean, I just had so many situations where I was running up against administration. I would be in the ER deciding whether to admit a patient or let a patient go and running up against administration and having to explain it. And that's what I found myself. I found myself as the doctor in the emergency room, knowing exactly what to do clinically, but someone with their business hat on saying you can't because of XYZ guidelines or XYZ payment criteria for the hospital. And that was what drove me. I said, this is crazy. How can this person who's never touched a patient tell me how I should practice? And then I realized, well, I don't have the business experience. I don't have that knowledge. And perhaps if I go out there and get it, it's going to make an impact on not just me as a doc, but many other docs and many other patients. So I think that is the truth. And I do think that is a big motivator for so many of us physicians. And you don't necessarily have to go get another degree. You just got to follow that and see where it goes, to your point. And naturally, I do think sometimes the universe opens doors when you do that.
Yeah, no, I think it's, be ready for the unexpected. And once you start pursuing one avenue, you never know kind of where it's going to end up taking you.
Yeah. And listen, you see it, right? The ONC is constantly asking for commentary, constantly asking for feedback. So, at a minimum, getting involved with things like this are just really key. And again, your professional associations are always very much, HIMSS is a huge supporter of physicians and I think tries to move the needle and offer forums for that with the AMGIS community as well. So, I think that there's more than enough opportunities. The question is, where's your passion and where's your time to do it?
No, I definitely agree. I mean, time is, I think, always the concern, no matter what you're talking about in life nowadays. But you're definitely right. It's, if you see something that sounds interesting, take a look and try it out, because you kind of never know what's going to happen once you do that.
Perfect. Yep. I totally agree.
So kind of thinking about that, are there, kind of any new things that you've been pursuing recently that kind of just happened to pop up or were, you weren't necessarily expecting?
Sure. Actually, that is a great question. So I'll tell you again, I really enjoy my relationship with the University of Miami. I just recently actually am joining the Medical School Alumni Association board, and it has just been so neat to think back on when I was a medical student who just wanted to be a doctor. That's what I always wanted to be. That was my passion. And now to see so many doctors in training and be part of the old classes, the new classes, and really shaping medical school sort of, what does a development path look like for the doctor today? What should that look like? And how can I, help that within my own community here in South Florida? It's been really exhilarating to see how much of that is a possibility and how rewarding it is also to just be part of that.
Yeah, actually, that sounds really interesting because it's, I think kind of as you're alluding to, changing medical education is an area that I think it's starting to get a little bit more focused, but, I think it also goes back to some of what we were talking about earlier, where, as you said, you're seeing a lot of newer physicians who are so used to, these different technology solutions. It's why not work to better prepare them right from the start, as opposed to sticking to the way things have always been done.
That's right. And, and I think any professional schooling, right, they're meant to teach you your trade, and then you're supposed to be able to be free and fly, right? I'm sure you went through this in law school as well. And the reality is that a lot of what we learn is so academic and theoretical, and medicine very much so, in that you learn a lot of the science, which is absolutely obviously the core, but there has to be some dedicated time to the business of medicine and the ecosystem of medicine and how to navigate that as a doc, and technology certainly being one part of that. So I'm enjoying that aspect and that role. And I'm also really appreciating how humbling the doctors of tomorrow are. I don't know that I would get into medical school if I was applying today. So it's really neat to be part of that.
No, and I think that's very, very interesting. And, you know, also, I think a good introspective point. But actually, believe it or not, we're already out of time. It's as usual, the time definitely flies by. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Geeta Nair, for a great conversation today.
Thank you so much, Matt, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing you in person real soon.
Yeah, no, it's always great to have a return guest, and you know, great to be able to chat again. And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.